Este cuento. I used to be a little boy, so old in my shoes. And what I choose is my choice. What's a boy supposed to do? A tender smile over to you. And cut you like you want me to. Cut that little child inside of me and such a part of you.
Ready to up, jump the score. We are now at episode number 54. My goodness. It is good to be back. This is Giants Amongst Us. This is where we share in the unique human experience. And this is where you're going to hear real stories that are told by real people. People just like yourself. First of all, as always, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're in a good place. It sure is good to be back. It's been a while. It's been a long minute. I had some things going on over here, so the hiatus was about a month or so since the last episode was published. My mother, she came over here to visit from California, her very first time setting foot in Europe. And so she was able to experience life on the other side over here. My wife and I had her and we spent time together. She was able to see some things and experience some things that she's always wanted to see and experience. So it was beautiful to be able to be a part of that and experience some of that joy. And it's about time. It's high time to get back into the swing of things, to sit down, to talk story, and to be able to connect with people once again from all walks of life. So if this is your first time tuning into the show, what we do here is we talk story. You're going to hear people from all walks of life who come from different backgrounds, who were raised different, who came up differently, and they experienced their own struggles, their own challenges, their setbacks, their failures, but the commonality is how they were able to start creating changes in their lives. These stories and these raw accounts and testaments are meant to be examples of the fact that you can do the same. They're even reminders, if you feel as if your life is hopeless and meaningless, that you, in fact, have value. You're not flawed. You're not defected. You're not incapable. You're not powerless. You're not some hackable animal. This is something that needs to be part of our self-talk, what we tell ourselves, what we meditate on, so that nobody is able to strip that power and authority from us. We are unique. We are divine. Our essence, our true essence is divine, and we are free. I don't care what group of people, who's sitting in office or which party is running the show, trying to put their thumb over you and put you in a box and have you toe line and do this or think that because it's good for you, it's good for the whole. No, we are free. And freedom could be a scary thing. That's part of the reason why a lot of people run from it. Because with freedom comes responsibility. With freedom comes accountability. But that also gives way to us being able to realize and actualize potentials and possibilities that we never could have imagined. But it's up to us to wake up to this way of living, way of thinking, way of acting, way of moving, way of experiencing this freedom, true freedom, where nobody could tell us any different. So with all that being said, I think it's a good time to lead this into the conversation because our guest today is going to be talking about something that is essential for us to be able to even experience true freedom. How can we truly be free if we haven't cleansed ourselves, if we haven't dealt with and we haven't healed from emotional wounds, childhood scars and wounds, things that we've encountered even as adults, but that have been a part of our lives. Sometimes it could be an accumulation of things, but that are undealt with. But we're going to get into all that today. Our guest is going to get into a little bit of the detail behind his source completion therapy, the awareness, the relive, re-experience, and release, and then the completion. Those are three phases of source completion therapy designed to cleanse and heal from emotional wounds. Today, Dr. Robert Bleck joins us, and he's got a story to tell.
So I was in bed and I needed comfort in the middle of the night. So I walked into my parents' bedroom. My mother didn't like to be inconvenienced. I woke her up and maybe I was crying. I needed some kind of comfort. She took me back, ran me back to my bed and tied me to the bed. The ropes went under the bed around my chest and they were tight and tight and tight. And I was terrified. I was thinking that I was going to be killed. I was, didn't know if I could get out of this. I was confused why. I just wanted some comfort. Somebody was tying me up. So there was her creative side. She would also humiliate me, degrade me in front of people, shame me in many ways possible for minor transgressions. Maybe I spilled some milk, maybe coming into play, there was a little dirt on the rug and she was obsessed with cleaning. So I could be beat for that.
Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Robert and his story. Robert, I want to thank you once again for taking time out of your day. You could have been anywhere. You could have been doing anything, but you chose to have a sit down with us to share a conversation and to get into some of your knowledge and expertise and even your experiences that led you to where you are today. So, Robert, thank you again. How is it going? How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. And I want to say it's my honor and my pleasure to be with you today.
Likewise, the pleasure is mine. The pleasure is mine. I mentioned this before we started recording.
Right.
I said that this is something that I look forward to. This is one of the highlights of my day. So it's going to be good to finally connect with you. Mm-hmm. We shot a few emails back and forth, but now to hear you break down some of what you have going on, your line of work, some of the experiences that you went through as a child to lead you to the line of work that you're in today, the field of work that you're in today, and the great deed that you're doing. Yes. You have a book out. Just to bring in everything before I let you go ahead and share with us this three-phase process. Let me slow down and pull up this information. I'm on your website right now, and it's a self-guided exploration, and the name of the book is Give Back the Pain, Emotional Healing Through Source Completion Therapy. And you'll break down three of the phases today and we'll get into that. But like for starters, Robert, I know you had your own experiences in life that probably led you to where you're at today. So I just like you to, however you want to get into it, however in depth you want to get into it, in the specifics that you'd like to talk about, just to, what led you into this line of work for starters?
Sure. So every piece, every part of my life had an important piece in leading me to where I am today. So what I'd like to do is start from the very, very beginning. My life, the early start of my life, was very painful and very difficult. My mother, who was also abused as a child, she was filled with anxiety. She was filled with anger. She was filled with rage. And a great deal of that fury came out on me. Beginning when I was about 3 years old, my mother began to beat me. She would degrade me. She would humiliate me. She would shame me. And all of those things seemed like they were occurring every day. So I want to give some specifics about that, if that's okay, the beatings.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Okay, so her beatings would take place. Sometimes she used her hands, her fists, to punch me, sometimes open hands. Sometimes she would find an object that was close to her, like a shoe, a hanger, a belt. She liked the belts because it would hurt me more. I was a little four-year-old, so she would hurt me. So she'd also get creative with her torment. One time, I know it was about three, because my sister wasn't born yet. I'm 4 years older than her. So I was in bed, and I needed comfort in the middle of the night. So I walked into my parents' bedroom. My mother didn't like to be inconvenienced. I woke her up. And maybe I was crying. I needed some kind of comfort. She took me back, grabbed me back to my bed, and tied me to the bed. The ropes ran under the bed, around my chest, and they were tight and tight and tight. And I was terrified. I was thinking that I was going to be killed. I was didn't know if I could get out of this. I was confused why. I just wanted some comfort. Somebody was tying me up. So that was her creative side. She would also humiliate me, degrade me in front of people, shame me in many ways possible for minor transgressions. Maybe I spilled some milk, maybe coming into play, there was a little dirt on the rug, and she was obsessed with cleaning, so I could be beat for that. So it was really quite terrifying to me. So how did it affect me as a little child? I was anxious, very anxious and very frightened. I would bite my nails to the really stubs, to where the cuticles could start bleeding. I was terrified of the dark. I slept actually with the light on at night until into my teens, so that fear stayed with me. I had horrible nightmares as a child. The nightmares consisted of monsters and witches trying to eat me, burn me, cook me, and it was just truly terrifying. Those were recurrent. So they were very, very scary and very painful. So what was the other? Also, the anxiety caused me to wet my bed, you know, at night. And I did that till I was seven. And she would use that also to shame me in front of people that I was wetting my bed. And she would tell them right in front of me. So that was really, really shaming. It was painful, that existence. So let's move forward to a little bit towards my nine-year-old self. I remember I was homesick from school, and I was watching the television, and I was watching the black and white film of Les Miserables. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Victor Hugo wrote that. It was about the French masses, the misery of them in the 1800s. And it centers around two characters, one who steals a piece of bread because they're so impoverished, his family, so he can feed it, and the other policeman that hounds him for the rest of the novel to throw him into jail, to torture him. And I was crying. I was 9 years old, and I was sobbing about the pain that I witnessed. I could feel the tears almost falling today. It was so disturbing to me. So what happened from there? Then I realized I was developing a great empathy, compassion, sensitivity for those who suffered and struggled in some way, whether it was an injustice that they committed upon them, whether it was poverty, whether it was sickness, whether it was a death that other people were feeling grief for. I was very disturbed by that. So between being abused myself, seeing other people, the injustice and the suffering, that was forming what I wanted to do with my life. Okay. That forming, that foundation started when I was young, started when I was about nine. So what I had to do is I had to figure out a way to survive my mother and get out of the house to go on to do what I want to do in life. So I began to get involved in sports. My main sports were ice hockey and soccer, and I became an athlete, and I played them through college. So that helped me get confident. It helped. The camaraderie was personal for me. It was really enjoyable for me. I enjoyed the camaraderie. Yeah. It was people who weren't hurting me. So that was special. So I also enjoyed nature. I would get up early in the morning. I would go out, watch the sunrise. I'd listen to the birds. And I always thought that they were singing to me. So the combination of the sports and the nature, I was able to start to survive my mother, whatever I had to deal with at home.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure, of course.
Everything that you were having to endure with your mother, you said that you also had a sister?
Yes.
Was your sister going through the same?
Got it. She suffered more verbal abuse. I was 4 years older than her. She suffered more verbal abuse and degrading, but she wasn't beaten like I was. My mother had it really in for me. She knows that I've talked to my sister about this, and she understands the reason I wanted to get away from the house. She always tells me.
Okay, yeah.
So, she didn't get beaten. She was just verbally abused. But, let's say, so 9. Did you have another question, Richard? I'll be glad to
answer. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No problem. Anytime. Just stop me for a question. Yeah. So that was about 9 I got up to. So at about 14, my mother was still coming to try to hit me, and I was playing sports at the time, and I saw her come towards me. I put up my palm, my hand, and I said, stop. You can't hit me anymore. I'm strong now. I'm not a child, and I have the ability to defend myself. So she looked right into my eyes, turned around, didn't say anything, walked away. That was the last time she hit me. So I put a stop to the beatings. Without me being violent, I didn't want that. I just said, I will defend myself. So it stopped that. So what I had to do then is that at 14, I had to figure out, I wanted to go to school to get more educated in how to help humanity. So I had to work. I figured I need money. My parents didn't have much money. So I'd work all kinds of jobs. I was a waiter. I was a busboy. I was a lifeguard at hotels and a bellhop at hotels. I scooped ice cream. I worked in a dry cleaning store. Worked in a dry cleaning store. Yes, I did. And that covers a lot of jobs there. Waiter, busboy. Yeah. I also, when I got to college, because I needed money then too, I shoveled snow for the railroad. During the winter, the railroad needed people to shovel the tracks. So I did that as well. So whatever job I could have, I took. So I needed extra money to go to college and continue it. I was fortunate academically. I was able to work hard, and I got a full tuition scholarship. So that paid the tuition. So this extra work would pay for my extras, whatever I needed for spending money. So I used it for that. Now at college, I had the choice. I started out, I took two courses of action. One was medicine to be a doctor, medical doctor. The other one was in psychology. So what happened gradually, the medicine, it didn't seem the right fit, the psychology did. So I got my bachelor's degree in psychology. And then I went on to my PhD studies. I went down, that was in Florida. I got a PhD in counseling. From there, now here's, I'm going to get into how I developed source completion therapy.
Okay.
So from graduating, I was trained in a lot of therapies, going through the studies, and I also went to therapy myself because I knew I had work to do still left inside. I still had anger. The sports didn't cover the anger. It didn't take it away. And I had fears, and I still had some nightmares. So I knew there was work for me to do. What happened is when I graduated with a PhD, I started working in schools, clinics, and then a university hired me to work to train people, graduate students, who were getting trained in being a therapist or a counselor. Now, what happened there? This is the road to what I do now. I began to get referrals while I worked at the university from people asking me that would I see them, and that because they were abused when they were children and they needed somebody, they liked me, they heard about me. They wanted, and I said, well, let's try it. So I opened up a private practice, and I began doing work with people who were abused when they were children. And I think I was successful. I kept getting more referrals, but not enough. I wasn't satisfied. I wasn't satisfied with the long-term permanent change that I wanted for these people who were really hurt. So what I did, I had to look at all of the therapies that I was working with these people. I had to see which worked, what things didn't work. And I threw what didn't work out. And I wanted to get to the source of this, their pain. And I wanted, I thought, based on my experience up to now, if I could get and clear out all of what was inside them, I would be successful and they would be healed. So let me go to the beginning of the process of source completion therapy. And I like to start at the beginning of everything. Okay.
Right.
So this way, I'm going to start with the birth of a baby. Okay. The way I see it and what experience personally and professionally has taught me, that we're all born basically innocent, pure, and just bursting with sweetness and sweet potential. Okay. I love holding babies. I think it's the most joyful thing I can do. I could hold a baby all day and be totally satisfied, contented all day just to hold the baby. So people who have babies around me and cousins, relatives, friends, they give me the baby to hold because they know I love it. So I love the purity, and it also, the joy is so overwhelming, it brings tears to my eyes. Okay, so the essence of this little baby that we all were is perfect. Okay, it doesn't know discrimination. It doesn't know hate. It's perfect. Okay, now here's the problem and the glitch. As perfect as we are, as innocent and pure as we are, we depend on caregivers for our survival. Okay, we depend on them for food and nurturance and sustenance. We depend on them to protect us from harm. They don't let us drive in traffic, don't stick our hand in electrical sockets, don't leave us in a hot car. And we depend on that when we're hurting emotionally and we're sad, and we depend on them for comfort and encouragement. So what happens if the opposite happens, if they beat us instead of loving us, if they neglect our physical needs, if they degrade us and demean us instead of encouraging and support us, a whole bunch of negative feelings are produced in this child, which we were, okay? They could feel worthless. They could feel unloved. They could feel insignificant. They could feel defective, empty, betrayed, invisible, rageful. So those are just a few. Worthless, those are the few of the feelings that everybody who I work with, no matter what their symptoms are, they have those feelings inside. Those are a few of them. Now, what happens with a child when they first have those feelings? They can't, a little child can't process those. It's not possible physically, biologically, to process those feelings. They would go schizophrenic. The betrayal is too overwhelming. So what the child does, they get suppressed. The brain suppresses those feelings, represses them, stuffs them down. Okay. But what happens over time and over the years, those feelings fester. And they fester and they combine and they turn into an emotional toxic brew. Okay. Now our subconscious knows that's in there. That the subconscious wants to push these feelings out because it's uncomfortable sitting there. I equate it to like food poisoning. You eat the food, your body wants to get all that stuff out. And then it comes out of every orifice just about. Okay. In this case, what happens is the subconscious, in the feelings case, wants to get these feelings out, but our conscious still doesn't want to feel it. We've learned how to push it down and avoid it and deny it. So what happens is it gets diverted. It gets diverted into obsessions, phobias, addictions, gambling, alcohol, drugs, sex. It gets diverted into criticizing everybody else around you, judging everything. It gets diverted into intense and inappropriate anger, like road rage. Everybody's familiar with that. Just, I'm going to digress and just tell the simple story about the road rage.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Please do.
Okay. So before I started work, for a lot of years, I would go to this local diner for breakfast, and the guys would come in before they worked. They would go in, we sit around and we would talk sports. We would talk whatever. And this one gentleman, he liked to sit with me, could talk sports. You know, I played hockey and soccer, so he was interested. He wanted to talk to me. And he would always complain. He would say how this person on the road infuriated him. He got so enraged. He got out of the car. And he would come up with a story like that almost once a week. He would come up with that. And fortunately, no one hit him with a tire iron or shot him. But he was telling me. So one day, because I know this can't be, the rage can't be coming. He doesn't know these people. So the rage and the anger has to be coming from a deeper place. So I asked him, what bothers you so much if the man in front of you didn't signal? What how can you have so much of this anger? Where's that coming from? That seems real intense. So he said to me, look, they didn't respect me. It's like I'm invisible to them. They don't care about my feelings. They don't care at all about me. So I said to him, well, who in your life, who important and significant in your life didn't do that for you or did do that, hurt you like that? And he trusted me at that point. And he says, well, he thought about it. And he says, my father. My father, he left the house. He was an alcoholic. He abandoned me and my mother. And he didn't listen to a thing I said. And I was furious at him. And I'm furious to this day. So he just transferred that on the road to these people who he didn't know. Okay. So a lot of people aren't even aware. And when even the media talks about road rage, they're not even going to the real source of this, which is anger hidden and repressed for a long time, most of the time from the childhood. So that's where that comes from. So there's a number of diversions. Also, I had one diversion that was really interesting was numbing. Numbing is also that people actually numb. They detach totally. Yeah. They don't have any feelings, so they can't feelings can't come up. So one of the women who I worked with, she came to me, and she would practice numbing not only mentally, she would do it physically. She wanted to be even physical pain, even hurting her. She wanted to numb that off, like creating her own anesthesia. So what she would do, she would look in the mirror and she would take a scalpel and she would start to cut her cheek until it bled. And she was making sure she didn't feel that.
Wow.
So that's how much numbing she wanted to do. So we got to the source. You know, I said, well, who caused you all that pain? You know, so who caused you? And it was her father. She was sexually abused by her father and she didn't want to feel it. She wanted to make sure she was numb from it. But through my process, we got all of the details of how he did it, and she confronted him, and that's part of the process. And so she healed. She started to feel. She was able to get married. She has children, and she was able to have a nice life. But she was totally detached. So all those diversions, the addictions and phobias are another one in there. Eating disorders. People think it's just eating. They can go to Eating Anonymous. They're going to just work on the symptom. No, because it's the symptom is coming from all the feelings that you've stored inside. So all of those I call diversions, and they're rampant in the population and rampant throughout our society. And everybody has them who I deal with. They come in with the symptoms. Those are the symptoms. And let's go to the how I heal them with source completion therapy. Unless you have any questions, Richard, right now.
The diversions that you speak of, that to me sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, that's in a way that the maladaptive coping mechanisms or defenses right. that we use to, like you mentioned, right. suppress these feelings, ignore these feelings, hide from these feelings, shut them off. But they're there. And I would say that through time, and as you mentioned, through time, they just build up, they fester, and they get stronger exactly. over the years, the more we push them down, and they just sometimes they boil over and they turn into these responses that we have and the way that we react and say, where did that come from? I got beside myself.
Exactly, Richard.
That's coming
exactly.
from somewhere. And what you're doing is you're getting to that place. You're getting to that source. And when you feel the feels, you know, when you get quiet, alone, and honest with it, and you can start to find some of the medicine in that darkness.
That's exactly right. And that's what that source completion therapy does. It gets totally to the source, and it brings up all those feelings and relieves them and release them.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're versions. You can call them denials. Absolutely, defense mechanisms. I like to call them diversions because I feel the conscious is diverting you away from what the subconscious wants. Subconscious wants to. So that's why I call it, they divert. It gets diverted in that tract. So that's why I call them diversions.
Is it something like, because you have the conscious and subconscious, in a way the conscious is trying to protect itself by doing these things?
Yes, exactly. So these people are doing that as a child. Why that's so hard to break? As a child, the conscious was doing a favor for the child. The child can't process the feelings. It's too painful. That's the only way it can survive. But as an adult, it's harmful because it's those feelings are still kept in. Person comes to me in their 30s, they've kept it in for 25 years. So it's hard to break that.
Yeah. It's very hard. Just over the years, it just becomes second nature, and it's a part of you. It's just the way that you deal with it, but you're not really dealing with it.
Not dealing with it at all. It's a way to avoid dealing with it. That's what it is.
Right.
And mask it. I like putting a bandage on a pus-infected wound, thinking it's gonna, yes, it's not there because you don't see it. But underneath is all the pus, all the infection. So that's what it's like.
So once they come to you, and I guess you're listening and you're hearing to all of the ways that they divert the attention away, you know, just from getting to the source of it. Is it then that you start to phase by phase go through the three phases that one goes through in order to experience it in full and to just release it, to purge themselves, yes, of these emotions, yes, and heal themselves?
Exactly. That's the only method I find that legitimately,
right,
gets permanent healing. And I'm not one, if there was something else that I've read about or heard about that worked, I would use it. But this is the only way I found over the years. I've done it for a couple of decades.
And with yourself as well, correct?
I did this with myself as well. So while I was coming up with this source completion therapy, I was seeing what worked for me and what worked for the clients or patients that I work with. And I was able to put it together in a sequence that worked. I mean, there's always things I say, maybe I could do this a little better. Yeah, but my anger is gone to my mother. Nightmares have stopped. I'm more peaceful than I've ever been since I've confronted my mother. But we could get in that when I get up to a completion.
Okay. Right. Know. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to walk us through a phase by phase.
I am. I like to do that. Yes. So okay. So those are, we know that the diversions are the way that a person mutes their feelings that they were storing from childhood, all those painful feelings. We know that. So they come for me. They come to me. All right. So I'm going to give you an example of awareness. That's the first phase. So and a lot of people, a lot of therapists and therapists talk about, oh, that's a more important. Mindfulness is the greatest. That's current. That's okay. That's good to be aware, but it's not going to it's not going to get rid of the feelings. Okay. So awareness is only a start in terms of my process. So in awareness, I use dream interpretation. I use body language. I look at their body language. I'm always listening and looking at their body as well as what they say, okay? And then I ask appropriate, called open questions, which I know what to ask to get them into, you know, to be working with this phase. So let me give you a couple of examples about awareness phase that I just talked about a little bit. So I was working, this is the first time I met this young woman, and she came to me, and I was doing an intake, just I was going to get her name, address. I got to the address part, and I saw her leg was shaking. Her legs were crossed, and her leg was shaking, and the foot was moving up and down, up and down, up and down. So I said, you know, I'm writing this, but I'm seeing your foot and your leg, and it's really active, and I like to know what it's saying. What is your leg and foot saying? So she said, no one ever asked me that one before. So, okay. So she thought really clearly and she says, it's saying I want to kick you. I want to kick you first in the face and then I want to kick you in the groin until you're in a lot of pain. So now I know that this can't be me, like road rage. It belongs something in the past. Someone hurt this young person. And so I got to get to that. So I said, well, how come you want to kick me and hurt me and damage me? She said, you're a man because you're a man. And all you guys want to do is use us women. You want to take advantage of us. You want to get what we can give you. And then you leave. Then you abandon us and we're left all alone and empty. So, and I said, well, who did that to you? Who really hurt you like that? She thought again and she said, my father. Okay. And then we went on. So that was how we do it in awareness. I saw her body was saying something. I asked the questions where it comes from because I know there's a source of that. So we want to get to the source. That's awareness. So whatever they bring to me, whatever symptom they bring to me, you know, I will know it has its root in the past. So I had another young woman came to me. She was in her late 20s, 30s, eating disorder, her whole life. She had an eating disorder. She would eat and binge. She would binge a lot of food, really food, like someone would take alcohol. She would take food and she would binge it. And I asked her, well, what do you think that's from? What's happening then? First, she said, it's separate from my past. It's separate. It has nothing to do with my past. I said, well, usually eating disorders are people using food to stuff down feelings. in what I know. They use it like an anesthesia, like a person would use drugs or alcohol. It's to calm the feelings, to mute them, and to mask them. So I said, can you tell me a little bit about your parents, you know, or your caregivers as you grew up? So she thought a little bit. She said, no one did this. I went to every program in AA. I went to everything. I went to other therapists. I went to psychiatrists. So I said, tell me about your father and your mother, because she had a father and mother. They were still alive. And then she started to say, well, my father was an alcoholic, never cared about me, never was affectionate. When I try to hug him, I try to sit on his lap. When I was really a young girl, he just pushed me away, pushed me off, fell. So I started to feel that the alcohol was more important than I was. Okay, so that's the source of the eating disorder. And then she, again, over the time, this is a process that takes time, more and more things about her father came out, more and more things and how she felt, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's a little bit about the awareness. And also, one more about the body language, if I could do that.
Okay, yeah, please.
One more example. So a woman came to me, again, and this is, maybe she was in her, I would say mid-30s. She was referred to me, and she came to me. She had rashes all over her body, okay, constantly, rashes. And they would itch, and they would bother her. They thought it was eczema. They gave her creams. They gave her oral medications. Doctors did it. Kept getting these rashes and rashes. And she said, they told me to come to you. So nothing's helping. So she sat down. I did the intake, and I sat down. I said, okay, well, let's look at this a little differently. Your body's saying something. What is under your skin saying to you? What is under the skin saying? She says, wow, that's a weird question. Again, no one ever asked me that one. I said, well, think about it a second. Okay, sometimes I might ask weird questions. I'm okay with that. Think about that. So she said, you know, what I'm feeling now as I talk to you, that is the poison that my grandfather put into me when I sat on his lap and he molested me. I feel that poison throughout my body, and it's underneath my skin. So that she was getting in touch then. That was through body awareness, what the rashes were from. When she started to continue to talk about it, the rashes went away when she continued the therapy. So again, that's awareness. Okay, so that's a simple of awareness.
I'm just curious about how you deal with dream interpretations, because this is something that I've been exploring with myself recently. I'm getting back to it, to where I try to wake up and jot down some of the things that came up when I was in dreamland. The subconscious is always awake, but I was curious to get your take on how do you, when you're dealing with dream interpretations. I've heard people mention that your subconscious is speaking through symbols. It's a different language. And so patterns, shapes, colors, and different things like that. And to understand the language of the soul is one thing, but when you're dreaming and all of the characters and scenes, how do you feel about the interpretation with people saying that those are different parts of you and not necessarily to be taken literally? I guess sometimes you may have a literal dream that is, it could be taken literally, but a lot of times those are just different parts of you, personalities, characteristics, things that you're dealing with. And, you know, just I'd like to get your take on that.
That's the dream interpretation that I like the most. And I use that with people. Okay. That each person and thing in the dream is a thing. Everything is a part of themselves. So I'll give you an example of one simple one. Example of that.
Yeah, please.
So this person, this again, it was this time it was a woman also. She told me of the dream. She was looking at a castle. A castle was in front of her, big castle, like from the Middle Ages, you know. And through every window, every portal, was a weapon of war. There was spears, and there was catapults, and there was machine guns. There was mortars, cannons. All throughout every window was something of war and destruction. And there was a moat in front, and there were alligators. And she says, I can't get what this is. So I said, okay, so imagine the castle is you, a part of you. So tell me how this goes. Tell me what you feel about that and what do you believe then? She says, oh, wow, that's interesting. She says, that is because I'm protecting myself. I don't want to be harmed anymore. I don't want to be hurt. I let no one near me. I let no one close to me. I'll hurt them if they get too close to me. I don't trust them. And then she said, well, that's not why I'm here. Also, because I don't want to be that way. I feel isolated. I feel empty. I feel alone. And I said, okay, so let's see, who hurt you when you were young? Okay, that's the question I ask again. And then she goes into, oh, it was both my mother and father. And then we go from there. That's still in the awareness stage. The dream interpretation and the open questions and the body language is still awareness. I'm getting them to look at how they were hurt in that first phase. Who hurt them, how they were hurt. So the dream interpretation, most of the people, they like that. They like that way of interpreting dreams, and it makes sense for them. And you elucidated it, you know. And anytime, just interrupt me, and I'll answer these questions. And okay, so they get aware now. The second phase, which is really very, very intense and emotional experience. Here, I take them back to the events that hurt them. I take them back in their mind. Okay, so through visualization, hypnosis, and I teach them self-hypnosis, how to go back in time. And it's very successful, but a lot of people are scared of it at first, so we do it very gently. And I always go at their pace, but this is not a rush process, the three phases. And it's a process that only ends when the person is finished, meaning it depends on their commitment to it. It depends on how deep and buried their feelings are. And it depends on how much courage they have to confront their source. And that's the last phase. So it takes its time, and I don't rush it. And that wouldn't work. So to take them back, and when I go back in time, I have them see all the sights. I have them feel all the feelings. I have them smell all the smells, any sounds that are in that experience. So if it was happened in a house, they look around, they feel whatever feelings, they see the furniture, they see the person who's hurting them, maybe they smell his perfume or beer, or if it's a woman, maybe they smell her perfume, whatever. So I have them feel that. And it brings the feelings it brings the feelings to the surface. And then they'll be ready for the third phase.
So that is, in your professional experience, that is essential to getting through with the healing process, is to go through that, to experience it. Because I've done my own, I guess you can say, just private research on some of these things. I'm not to say that I'm schooled in it, where I took years of courses and to understand this, but I mean just doing my own individual research. But I've learned that the body stores trauma, and so in order for that trauma to be released, because like you mentioned earlier, that we suppress it, we don't give it the opportunity or the space to complete its course and run through its body into I guess purge out of our system. And so in order to do that, is this what is leading to the whole process to be completed, is where you're experiencing it again, and you're getting in that emotional state to where all of these feelings, the senses, the sensations are just heightened and primed?
That's it. Yes, they're heightened and they're felt, or else they stay locked in the body. They stay locked in your subconscious. Then you divert. Usually if people live years, decades, one diversion won't be enough. They'll go to two. I had one woman, she was, she smoked, she drank, she was obsessed with cleaning, she gambled. So she had all those feelings, all those symptoms and diversions, I call them, when she first came to me. So they have to be purged. They have to be purged out. That's what gives you the long-term permanent healing. And that's what I found over the years.
And the meditation and self-hypnosis, and that puts them in that state.
Exactly, Richard.
Okay, got it.
So I teach them that, or that's in my book too. There's a whole script of going to relaxation. That's why you had asked me at the beginning about could a person do it themselves? Yes. And I said, well, it's in there. It shows them how to do it. But if they want to come to the therapy too, yes, I do both. It's both, it goes hand in hand, the book and the professional. Gotcha. Gives them a good idea of what needs to be done, because Freud actually talked about releasing the pain from the subconscious. That's what I'm doing in the second phase, but he didn't go further. He didn't go into the third phase that I do. So that makes a difference in that. And a lot of therapies don't do that. So they would do all three. Mine would do all three. And then the person's really healed. I worked with an actress who was really struggling. And she was a good actress, talented person, young person. And she read my book. And she saw me on a show. Gaia was the streaming network at the time. And she called me. She got in touch with me. She says, look, I've had really bad experiences with therapists. And I'm scared of going to therapy. But this seemed right for me. It made a lot of sense for me, you know. And I spoke to her. I said, well, what was wrong with the other therapists? Well, they didn't go deep enough. And they would... talking to me about, they're all using EMDR, it's called eye movements. Are you familiar with that too, Richard?
Yeah, yeah.
She said that was useless to me. It wasn't helping me at all. And I went to the psychiatrist because I was having these out-of-body experiences and it was terrifying me. And he said he wanted to give me, he thought I was schizophrenic. He said, well, you're schizophrenic, I'll give you medication. That terrified her too. So I talked to her, said, by talking to her, you're not schizophrenic. What's happening? You're diverting. Your brain is diverting you away from feelings you've stored inside. Okay. That's what's happening. It's called a split. So your brain wants to become something else so it doesn't have to feel the feelings. That's what's happening. Mm. She said, well, that makes sense. And I said, so her hurt you. Let's go over that. Let's go over that. So she says, well, this in this case again, it was my father. You know, she was talking, and she started going into it, and she had enough awareness, but she was really scared to make the third leap, which was to confront the person, her father, and tell him how she felt about what he did, and how it made her feel. So that took us a little while to get there. She wrote him letters and she read them to me, but she didn't send them. So we worked at that for a while. And she says, I'm ready now to confront my father. She confronted her father. She started to confront all those who hurt her in her life. And recently I got an email saying how I saved her life, and she doesn't know how to thank me. So that was why that second phase is really crucial.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you for sharing that. And let's say those that hurt them are no longer with. So how would you have them go through that process of, okay, let's go ahead and confront the one who did you wrong, who harmed you, or who transgressed your, how would they go about it? Or how would you explain that to them?
Right. I'd like to commend you for the questions. And these are really great questions you're asking, yeah. Richard. So that's terrific. Okay, so let's get to the third phase then. So you've become aware of number one. You went back in time. All the feelings came up. That you're raw. You're vulnerable. You have all these feelings inside. Not sure what to do with them. So the third phase is you go to the source. Okay, that's why it's source completion therapy.
Ah, okay, got you. Okay, I jumped the gun.
No, it's okay. No, it's good. Jump anything you want. I'm glad to answer anything anytime. Okay, right. So the source is, I teach them then how to confront the person or persons who hurt them. Okay, it's a feedback model. You tell them how, what they did, how you felt about it, and how it affected you. So that's the idea of it. I like if they could do it personally, in person. I mean, that is a good way to do it. If they're not alive, you could go to their grave. Okay, you could write them letters still. So that's how they can go to grave and talk to them. The person whose parents are alive, you could do this. You could do that in person. You could call them. You could FaceTime. There's a million different ways to look at it. Zoom. That's the one I use. FaceTime and Zoom. So I'm sure there's other platforms you could use that to confront the person. When I'm saying confront, I don't mean to curse at the person. I don't mean to yell at them. I mean to tell them how you felt and what it made you do. And how it affected you. So that's the idea of it. This is a hard phase for people because they resist it, because a lot of people, they still want their parents' love. We wanted our parent love, so they're afraid to tell them the parents this. They're afraid they lose whatever crumbs they have from the parent. And also, when they're doing it, also it brings up these feelings again, and it's difficult for them. Difficult it is. So it's a hard phase to do for most people. It was for me too. So, but I did it. So let's see. The grave is one way. If they're dead, I have them write to their parent. They can't send a letter. Sometimes they burn the letter afterwards, like a ceremony. So they do that.
It's like performing a ritual or yes. some kind of ceremony to where you're exactly. finally just the completion. You're finalizing this whole process of your healing.
That's it. And, yes. So also there's in my room, if people have their parents still alive, they bring them into the office, to my office where I work, and then they talk to them in the office. Okay. If they're not alive, or if they don't want to come in, or if the person doesn't want to have them come in, the source figures, they could visualize, just go back, close their eyes, have them close their eyes and visualize the parents in the office, get their faces, what they look like, what they're wearing. I ask those questions. And they said, okay, talk to them. So then they'll just talk to them. They'll visualize them in their mind and talk to them. And that's relieving and completing also. So they don't have to be alive to for this to be effective.
Thank you for explaining that. Yeah.
So that would complete the cycle of the three phases.
Do you find a lot of, well, you did talk about that there's a lot of people that they struggle with either feeling the feels, going back to that time and that place, because you're just revisiting reopening a wound.
Correct.
And that can be, that's very difficult to confront.
It is.
And so I know you work at the pace of the individual. Are there certain things that you kind of do to prompt them or lead them or to ease their way into that? Or you just, it's really, if they're not ready, they're not ready and you can't move forward.
Right. So I do stay with their pace. If they don't want to go further, then they won't go further. But yeah. If I sense that they still want to, I'll stay with the awareness phase more. We'll cognitively talk about it for a while, you know, and they can control the emotional meter. So they'll stay until they're ready to go to the next phase. Mm. Again, I'm not working with people that don't understand the process or don't want to do it. There's a lot of people that don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So they're not going to want to do it. So I don't work with them. People who are really interested in it, they will want to work with this. And even though it's when it's really hard, they still can't do it. Those I will stay with as long as they want. I'll stay with them. I've had one person for 15 years, you know, staying with.
Wow.
And then another people also 15. People work with me for a while and they've changed their lives around drastically and they want to continue to grow and heal. These are people who have been severely abused. So it's not simple. It's not simple. It's not easy for them and they know it. And I don't say this is a simple process, but once they know, if they ask me, I say, no, I've been through it too. They understand that I understand them and then it works better for them. So they trust me. They get to trust me. If I rush it, they're not going to trust me. They'll think I'm hurting them in some way. So yeah. I just wait till they're ready to do that.
That's just a beautiful work that you're involved with. The whole fact that this, what brings to mind, I've been just reading and learning more about these archetypes that are spoken of, the persona. You have the victim, which I told you earlier, that was something that I wore right. and I was for the longest time. And right. what comes to mind with you is the wounded healer. And so the suffering and the darkness and the pain and the hurt, right. but through that's right. where you were able to find right. the medicine, not just for yourself, but to help others. And that's a beautiful thing that you're involved with and doing. And so it was really a pleasure to speak with you and to hear it from you directly, to give you this space where you can share your own experience. You were very transparent and open about the things that you went through, unfortunately, but the light that you found in that darkness that, for yourself and then to bring it to others and just to help. And you've been doing this for years, right? And it's been tried, it's been tested. You've helped a lot of people along the way to find their yes. own strength and the resources to
yes.
be that healer for themselves.
Correct. Now I confronted my mother, you know, through the process. And in my case, my mother was contrite. She says, I hurt you. And I'm sorry. And if I had to do it all over again, I would do it differently. You know, I doubt if that would be possible because she didn't really work on herself. But I accepted that and she listened to me and she just apologized. So
after that, did you stay in contact with her? It's pretty distant since then.
Well, I did stay in contact. In fact, she would call me. She had moved down to Florida. I'm in New York. And she would call me in later years. She had passed away recently. But in later years, she would call me often about troubles that she was going through. And she says, can I talk to you, Robert, about it? And I said, yeah, I'll listen to you. I'll always listen to you. So then she called and I listened to her. And it was amiable. So, some people talk about forgiveness. Also, a lot of therapists.
Oh, that's, you read my mind. That was that was right at the tip, and it was just maybe my forehead is made of glass, or that's just something that all of us share in that trouble, yeah. And the holding on to the hate, the hurt, the wounds. Sometimes it's difficult to even forgive ourselves, but also those who hurt us.
Correct. Right. So I have a little bit different bent on the forgiveness piece. If you want to hear it, you want to hear it?
Yeah, we'd love to.
Because a lot of therapists ask me, a lot of people that I interact ask me about that. Is that part of your process? I say, well, what is my process is the person that I'm working with. That's my most important piece, not the person who is the perpetrator. So in order for the person to be healthy, they have to get all the feelings out. And they have to get out the feelings to the source. That's the most important part of healing. If they get the feelings out, they might be open to forgiveness because they'll have more room inside. They'll have more room inside for others. They'll have more compassion. They'll have more openness. So forgiveness might come. But if it doesn't, that's okay with me too. Some people don't want to forgive. So I'm okay with that. As long as those feelings are out, my person's going to be healed. So, that's how I look at that.
Okay, because you know, I've also, just to give you probably heard it before, I've heard those, they preach in order to heal, you have to forgive. You have to.
I say the opposite. Okay. In order to heal, you have to release the feelings, then you might be open to forgiveness. So it's a little different.
That can be a byproduct of it.
Correct. It's not the heal, because if let's say I'm not complete with my stuff, I didn't go to my mother, so where would I be? I have this anger in me, I have this fury in me, and someone says, forgive her. And I just say, okay, I forgive you. That's just words. These feelings are still inside of me. So if they don't come out to my mother, they're going to come out to my husband or my wife or whoever. They'll come out to my dog. They'll come out on anything. I'll start drinking over it. Or taking drugs not to feel it. So that has to be the crux and the most important part of my healing a person, releasing the feelings. And if they want to forgive, it's up to them. You can heal without the forgiveness. You could do that.
That's good to hear that side of it, because I have heard that preached by many and some professionals, and then of course just other people, they just parrot and repeat what they hear. But there's always been something in me that felt a little different about it. Exactly. I was like, why is that have to be? I mean, if it comes, but how can you?
Exactly right, Richard. That's the way I feel. I worked with a woman who came to me. Do we have a minute or two more?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I work with a woman who came to me in 20s. It was really, really messed up. She was on drugs. She couldn't hold a job. She was disheveled, wasn't taking care of her body physically. And she says, look, I haven't had a shower. I haven't gone into the shower in years. I use a sponge bath. And I asked her, you know, what was going on? Who hurt you? And she says, my stepfather, he raped me in the shower. You know, my mother had died and he was raping me in the shower. Okay. So, and he also raped me on the bed. He tied me to a radiator and he made me feel worthless. After he raped me, he called me a whore and he called me a no good and he called me worthless. So the rapes, he raped her over and over again in the shower and she couldn't take the shower. She just couldn't do it when she came to me. And then we went back in time and you know, she did do it. She talked to her father. She was one of the ones that burnt the letter because he had died. That I told you, she wrote a letter to him and died. And she was abused so badly. She healed. She was able to hold a job down. She went back to school in social work to get a social work degree. And she met a man. She married, had a child, and she was having a nice life. But forgiveness, you know, I don't know how you forgive someone that rapes you. You could lose the intensity of the anger by getting it out. I don't know if that's warranted of someone's forgiveness. I don't believe it is. So this depends on the severity. You heal by releasing the feelings. Then you might be open to forgiveness. That's how I say it.
Well put. Well put. Thank you. Thank you for that explanation and just sharing your opinion on it. You're dealing with people who are broken, they're battered, they're beaten. And I'm just, I have this, something that just came to mind was in your line of work in the dealing with these traumatic events and experiences that people have undergone and suffered. Does it weigh on you also spiritually, your soul, your heart? Like what do you do to keep yourself at balance and to be able to take that and not to let it also absorb and eat you? Is there something that you do, a practice or things that you do just to take care of your spiritual well-being and just your hygiene, the health of your mental hygiene? And
it's another great question, Richard. It's a really good question. At first, when I started doing this years ago, it was weighing really heavily on me. I was listening to stories, the worst that mankind and womankind could do to each other. That was difficult for me, and I had it done to myself. So that did weigh on me. And at first, I was having trouble sleeping. You know, I needed a little medication to be able to sleep because I had to work. So that helped me through that. And after getting through that time, I focused just on the person. I'm able to focus mainly on the person and healing them. So my thoughts, my energy goes on, what's the next question? What's the next thing I need to do with this human being to help them and guide them? So that helps me. That helps me today. So what I do, what also helps are endorphins. I exercise every day, every morning. I'm up 4:30, 5 o'clock. I have an exercise pause before I go to work. I swear, I skied a lot. I played sports for a long time. So in nature, I go into the mountains, upstate New York, often, and I just am in peace. I love in the forest, hiking in the forest. I love the majesty of the trees and the leaves and the cool breath that I take in from the cool mountain air. I love all that. I take that in and I still look at a sunset. I still look at a sunrise. I still hear the birds sing to me. So
you got it down. That's a sweet way.
So those are the things I do. And I also, my wife is, as yours, really supportive of me over the years. She's been terrific and helped me. Sometimes she's was in the same field, and I would go to her if I was stuck on something, and I would run it by her, and she supported me that way. And she was always kind to me, and I trusted her implicitly. And I have two little grandchildren that I was fortunate enough to live long enough to play with, and I'm playing with them. And they love to play with me, all kinds of games. And I get the purity of their spirit. So those are some of the things I do in my life.
That sounds like a taste of heaven to me, you know. And even you read these old stories, whether you want to take them literally or their analogies or parables. But even Jesus, when he was dealing with all of the downtrodden people of his time and the sick and the blind and the Pharisees, right, and people speaking against them, he was speaking his word and he was sharing his heart with them. And after that, he would go away in silence, go off to the hills or something. So that was his time where he recuperated. And this is just in accord with how you said that after you're dealing with the clients and the people that you deal with, after that, you still recharge your body. And there's a lot of ways that you do it with nature, with the beautiful people that you have in your life. And that keeps you at balance. And that is a good way to take care of oneself. Just for anybody, whatever it is that you're doing, but you have to have some time. It's almost definite. It is a must that you have to have some time to recuperate and refill your cup so that you can later on fill the cup of somebody else.
Exactly. One thing also I do that I just came to me, I'll say this, the rewards that I get from doing this work also motivates me, inspires me, because people write to me, they thank me. They go on to live productive and fruitful and enjoyable lives. So that gives me, encouragement to continue to do it. So that's important also to me.
That's the priceless, what we were talking about earlier, that priceless nugget that money can't buy. When the gold, when the silver fades away and all the shiny things stop flickering, that is going to be, that's worth 3,000 lifetimes.
I think so. Yes, I agree.
Wow. I agree. Robert, it was a treat. It was a pleasure to finally connect. We spoke a bit before we were finally able to do this live and in person, as in person as you can get from living in two different parts.
Right. Well, it works. It
two
works,
different
yeah.
parts of the world. It yeah. works. Yeah. The beautiful magic wand of technology. Yeah, and I'd like to give you a chance to point people to your website and how they can find your book and all the information and the ways that people can find you, or if they're curious to learn more about an in-depth detail of your tried, proven method and technique to recover and to heal from whatever it is that is plaguing you inside, and to deal with that inner world and the inner dynamics. I'd like to, go ahead and share how people can get in touch with you.
Sure. So the best place you could start with going to my website, it's robertbleck.com. So it's really simple. That'll have my book on it too. And in addition to some other things, it'll have my phone number. You could reach me at my office, and it has the email. You could write to me, contact me. It has the contact information. So that's the best place to go. The book is called Give Back the Pain, and that's available. You could buy it from the website. You could buy it on Amazon. That's what people seem to buy it the most, from Amazon. But you could get it from bookstores that you know. It should be available. And that'll give you all the information. And you could, if you have a question, you could call me. You could get in touch with me through the website. And I'll always answer you. I tell people, even the ones I work with, if you contact me, I promise you I will always get back to you as soon as I can. Of course, a number of therapists don't do that with people, and the people don't like it. So I will always get back to you as soon as I can, and I promise. And I've been able to hold on to that promise since I'm working with everybody.
That's respectable. So. That is very respectable. And Robert, again, thank you so much for your words, for your wisdom, for sharing your experience, and for the great deed you're doing to humanity and to society at large. We need more people like that, where you use this pain, this suffering, and you used it to not only help yourself to find the medicine in that, but to also help others. And that's what you're doing, and that's what you continue to do. So it was great to connect and hear some of that today. Appreciate it.
And I thank you, Richard. I really enjoy this experience, your warmth, your authenticity, your understanding of what I do. It was just a pleasure to speak with you. And I thank you very much. And I applaud what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I hope you continue to flourish in your life.
Oh, thank you for those kind words. Really, they mean a lot. Thank you. I was going to say, if you have any final words, but wow, that's a beautiful way to end it. And thank you so much. The pleasure was mine, truly.
Thank you, Richard.
I hope you all enjoyed this conversation today with Dr. Robert Bleck. It was a real treat. It was a privilege, though we met for the first time, but I can feel the warmth in his spirit. I can feel how genuine he was, and it was just great to hear how he was able to move forward. Everything that he went through, the suffering, the abuse from his mother for the better half of his childhood, but things stopped. And when they stopped, he was still left with wounds. He was still broken. He was still damaged. But there was something inside of him where he wanted to figure out how he can help himself. And then by helping himself, how he can also help others. And that's why I was reminded of a wounded healer, someone who goes through their sickness and their pain and their ailment, and they're able to find that cure and that medicine to heal themselves and in return heal others. Robert is doing a wonderful deed. You heard his explanation with the source completion therapy, the awareness part of it, where people learn to explore and examine and become aware of the main source of their dysfunctional behaviors. And then you have the second phase. That's where you're learning to relive and re-experience in vivid details the events and feelings and the circumstances related to that pain. And then you have the completion, which of course is the purging process, and how people are able to find the strength and learn to directly and effectively confront those responsible for the pain. Three phases. His book gets into detail. If anybody's interested, I'm going to link his information in the show notes. The title of his book, Self-Guided Exploration, Give Back the Pain, Emotional Healing Through Source Completion Therapy. And this is something that has been tried and tested in his own life and in his practice to help countless others cleanse and heal from their emotional wounds. Robert, thank you again for your kind heart, your warm, empathetic, and genuine spirit in that good work that you're involved with. My best to you, yours, and all that you continue to do. You are a giant amongst us. And of course, a big thank you to all of you listening, wherever you're listening from, however you're listening to the show. I appreciate you inviting us into your home, into your car, your drive to and from work, and for you just sharing some of your time and your day with us. I appreciate it. It's always good to get a word, letting me know where you're listening from, certain episodes or certain guests and topics or stories that hit home for you. I really appreciate that. And if there's anyone listening, you appreciate the show, you appreciate what we're doing, there's a couple of things that you could do free of charge. It's not going to cost you a dime, just a few minutes of your time. You can either write a review, or you can leave a rating on any one of the links that you'll find in the show notes. And it's going to do one of two things. For one, it'll help these stories and this word fall in the ears of new listeners. And another thing it'll do is help us on the back end just continue to create something that has meaning, something that has value, and something that we can continue to grow and enjoy together. This is a ride that I'm interested in sharing with you. Your process as you grow and develop, and on my end over here, evolving and growing as a human being. You know, making better choices, making better decisions. And that's another big part of it, is just us growing together. How do we change the world? It's by changing our world. And what happens is, when we change ourselves, when we change our world, that creates that rippling effect outward into our environment, into our surroundings, and starts to create changes, and it starts to shift the dynamics of our environment. You guys be safe out there. You guys be sane. And remember, you can always be the change you wish to see. We're going to catch up, and we're going to do this again real soon. It won't be long. Before I go, I want to remind anybody that if you would like to be a part of this show and share your story, or even a story of someone in your life that has impacted you in a positive way, you could always reach out to us via email. We'd be happy to connect. Until next time, and very soon, peace.
Do-wop, do-wop, do-do, do-wop, do-wop, do-wop. I'm looking for a sign to know I'm on the right road. Ain't seen no signs since.